You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's Live Talk. I'm your host, Megan Mandeville. Today we will be speaking with Eric Bruss, Associate Director of the HIV Health Program for AIDS Action Committee of Massachusetts. Eric Bruss joined AAC in 1995 and oversees the organization's HIV Health Library and the HIV Health Institute. He consults with the Client Services Director and others in the organization to develop and set policies and procedures affecting client services. Eric also tracks developments in HIV treatment and related health matters and provides one-on-one counseling about HIV treatments, opportunistic infections, side effects, and other health issues to clients, providers, and others affected by the disease. He writes about treatment and health-related issues for AAC's monthly newsletter, Forward Living, and its quarterly Wellspring magazine. Eric is an accomplished writer and editor with particular emphasis on medical and scientific topics. His works include rewriting and editing articles in the Intensive Review of Internal Medicine, a continuing education book for physicians, rewriting and editing chapters in the American Cancer Society's Cancer Manual, and writing and editing summaries of medical research for HealthScan Incorporated and Advanced Therapeutics Communications. He also wrote weekly news features on medicine, fitness, and nutrition for the audio text company InfoPlus Incorporated, as well as producing feature articles for the electronics magazine Microwaves and RF. Most recently, he edited HIV-related curricula for Sphere and Victory programs and has written articles on HIV treatment for the website PositiveWords.com. He also worked with World Information Systems, an environmental publishing and consulting company in Cambridge, Mass., where he served as editor and contributing editor on three environmental newsletters. Eric also wrote the book, The Almanac of Renewable Energy, and wrote and edited chapters in another book, The Almanac of Science and Technology. He graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree with a double major in English and Geology from Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts, where he took additional courses in writing, mathematics, physics, and computer science. He also completed the Radcliffe Publishing Procedures course, an intensive introduction to book and magazine publishing at Radcliffe College in Cambridge, Mass. Eric completed the Journalism Fellowship for Advanced Studies in Public Health at Harvard University's School of Public Health, focused on public health and medicine. Active in community work, he served as a reader at Recording for the Blind, a telephone counselor at the Samaritans, a tutor and mentor at One With One, a program for persons who have recently immigrated into this country, and a volunteer at the Prison Dharma Network, a group that provides books to prisoners. He was a founding member and steering committee member of the Boston chapter of the Buddhist Peace Fellowship. Today, he will discuss the needs of HIV-positive offenders, the challenges they pose in treatment, and services available to them in the community. Welcome to today's Live Talk, Mr. Bruss.
Hi, Megan. Glad to be here.
Great. Okay, our first question. Let's talk about the situation in correctional facilities. How many offenders are HIV positive?
Well, nationally, there are about 25,000 prison inmates who are known to have HIV, and that's the latest figure according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. Many of the HIV positive inmates are in some of the highest population states. New York has about 5,500 HIV positive inmates, Florida about 2,600, and Texas about 2,400.
Now, do they know it?
Well, it turns out that I think many people, both inside and outside the correction systems, aren't aware of their status. Nationally, the estimates are that about one-third to one out of every four people who are HIV positive don't know their status because they've never been tested or haven't been tested recently enough to know a positive result. And in some cases, people are first diagnosed when they're incarcerated, because they haven't actually been accessing regular medical care on the outside. So actually when they get in and inside and actually may have access to medical care more regularly in some cases, then they'll be offered a test and find out their status there.
Now these offenders presumably are treated inside the facility for their HIV, but what happens when they are released? Do they continue to receive treatment?
That depends. In places like Boston, where I work, there are a number of agencies and programs in place to help people make the transition from the correction system to their communities. And part of that transition involves setting people up with a doctor and other medical care. In other states, I think it varies quite widely. One issue that's a major one for many people is having access to the HIV drugs, and there's a program called the HIV Drug Assistance Program, which helps people who don't have insurance, let's say, or aren't able to afford the drugs themselves, and that's most people because the drugs cost about $15,000 a year, to access those drugs. In many states, there are waiting lists, and that applies both for people who are incarcerated or recently released, as well as people on the outside. So I think in North Carolina, the waiting list is several hundred people. So you have to get put at the bottom of the waiting list in that case if you don't have the money to pay for treatment yourselves and don't have insurance. And that can be a real barrier. Fortunately, in Massachusetts, where I'm working, we have quite a few good safety nets in place so that most people who need treatment, just about everyone who needs a treatment, will be able to access it in one way or another.
So beyond treatment, these offenders need other supports. Can you talk about their other needs in the community?
Yes, many people who are infected with HIV are at risk for other conditions. For example, people who are infected through injection drug use are often co-infected with hepatitis C, which is a major health challenge. It can cause extensive liver damage and ultimately death if it's untreated, if the disease has progressed far enough. Also, many people who are incarcerated may be in need of mental health services, and as I mentioned, because injection drug use is often a factor in why someone gets infected, as well as for many people why they're incarcerated, substance use counseling is a major need for many people.
Are there any others?
Those are some of the main ones that I'm thinking of. Certainly, housing can be a big issue. People who don't have a place to go when they're released might end up, you know, be facing homelessness. So housing is a huge issue for many people. And trying to connect people with transitional housing and then helping them find a more permanent place to live can be very challenging and is hugely important to people who are being released into the community.
Now, when you mention these other needs, are offenders typically able to receive help, the help that they need in the community?
Yes, I think so. It depends, again, on the situation, but I'd say in Massachusetts, and particularly in the Boston area, which is the area I'm most familiar with and do my work, we have many agencies and programs, and we try as much as possible to work very well with each other. For example, the Department of Public Health, HIV/AIDS Bureau, got funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to do a program called the Transitional Intervention Program, and that is specifically designed to help people make the transition to transition their care from inside to the outside. And there are other groups, like there's another group called SPAN in Boston, which also will begin work with someone while they're still incarcerated and help them make that important transition out. And the first several days can be very critical because people are most vulnerable, and they're often, if a person doesn't have a place to go right away, there may be temptations to get involved in high-risk behavior again. So it's really important to help people during those critical first few days and then provide continuing support thereafter.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Eric Bruss of AIDS Action Committee of Massachusetts about services for HIV-positive offenders. Now, getting back to the discussion, what are some of the elements of successful outreach for this group?
Well, it's really essential to meet people where they're at, and by that I mean physically as well as emotionally and spiritually. Services need to be in locations that are easy to get to. Counselors and case managers need to have the contacts and other information at their fingertips when they're working with someone who's incarcerated or recently released. And they also need to be willing to make the calls and do the footwork needed to help offenders connect with the services they need. And when I talked about meeting people where they're at emotionally and spiritually, what I also meant by that is that it's essential that they provide a welcoming face and a non-judgmental attitude when providing information and services, since that's so important in terms of helping provide that important link back into the community and keeping people coming back for services that they need.
Now, how involved has AIDS Action Committee become in this issue?
Well, it's a very high priority issue here at AIDS Action. In my program, the health program, HIV health program, we felt that the issue was so important that we would take it upon ourselves to organize a conference to educate people about the challenges and needs and opportunities for serving people who are incarcerated and ex-offenders. We did our first HIV and corrections conference last year at the end of the year, and then just completed our most recent conference last week. We also have a number of other programs here. AIDS Action is the largest AIDS service organization in New England, so we have a variety of services that we provide to our 2,400 clients, or thereabouts. It keeps increasing, so it may be up to 2,500 by now. But basically, we provide information on housing. We provide the health information from my program. Both the people inside and outside people can request information by mail or over the phone, or drop in when they can if they've recently been released. We have very extensive case management with links to other agencies. And we also have a check-in program, which is provides regular check-in from phone volunteers to our clients who are interested in that service. So not only are they providing practical information on services both at AAC and elsewhere, but they're also providing some emotional support. Our volunteers will often develop a connection with the clients that they call on a regular basis, so that people can feel that, you know, important support, that they're not alone. So we really have quite a variety of programs here. Another program that we have is Nutrition Works, which helps provide a healthy basket of groceries to people on a regular basis who are HIV positive, generally people with lower incomes, which would often be the case for people who are being newly released. We provide up to 12 grocery bags of nutritious food a month in collaboration with the American Red Cross and the Boston Living Center. So it's a variety of services that we offer.
And earlier you mentioned partnerships. Can you talk about the importance of agencies building partnerships to serve this population?
Yeah, it's absolutely essential because, in this day and age of, you know, reduced availability of funds for social services, we want to, of course, reduce any duplication of effort so that we're most efficient in the way we serve our clients. And also, we realize that, you know, even an agency like AIDS Action, which has a lot of resources, can't go it alone, and shouldn't, because there's so much expertise out there that we can plug into, provided that we make the effort to make all the connections that we need. So we do work very closely with the other social service agencies in the greater Boston area and beyond. And of course, we have to be concerned about protecting the confidentiality of our clients when we're sharing information, but we really will work together very closely to try to cover as many of the needs that they have as possible.
Great. Well, that concludes today's live talk. Thank you to Eric Bruss for joining us today to talk about services for HIV-positive offenders. Also, thank you to our audience for tuning in. To learn more about this issue, be sure to read this week's articles on the Corrections Connection at corrections.com. For CCNN, I'm Megan Mandeville.
Thanks, Megan.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.